Welcome to Perspectives. I'm Joan Herman. As communities around the Northwest grapple with the complex issue of homelessness, a nonprofit seaside organization has purchased an old Finnish boarding house in Astoria's Uniontown and plans to open it as a homeless shelter in early fall. The facility has room for up to 60-plus dormitory-style beds for individuals wanting to get back on their feet. My first guest, Alan Evans, is the founder and executive director of Helping Hands Reentry, the organization that has purchased the old boarding house. Later, I'll speak with Astoria Mayor Arlene Lemire and Astoria Police Chief Jeff Spalding about a citywide task force that has been meeting since early this year to address challenges and problems involving homeless individuals, particularly in downtown Astoria. But first, my interview with Alan Evans, the director of Helping Hands Reentry. This program was pre-recorded. Welcome to the studio, Alan.
Thank you for having me today.
Why don't you update us on how the renovation of the Finnish boarding house is going?
Renovation is going well. We've got scaffolds set up around the building now. We've worked out our permits with the city, and we are replacing all of the siding and all of the windows in it first. We want to get it cleaned up and airtight and watertight on the outside, and then we will begin working on the inside of the building after this.
And you hope to be able to open it to individuals in September? Is that right?
That's correct. Yes, we're hoping to have early September is when we're hoping for an open date.
When did you decide to buy the building?
Well, we've been working with NOAA on this building for quite some time.
Northwest
Oregon Housing Authority.
Thank you.
With Todd and his crew over there coming up with an opportunity to utilize this building the best. And because of the way the building is structured, it's a perfect fit for the kind of program that we run. So we've been working on this for quite some time. And every time we put a budget together for it, it was an unreachable budget because it was with federal dollars, which made it extremely difficult. So we decided to look at this a different way, and the opportunity came up for the purchase, and we jumped on it.
How did you get the money to buy it and as well as convert it into dormitory-style housing?
Yeah, and, you know, dormitory is a really tough word. It's another confusing word. It's like homelessness. It's a really complex word. So dormitory is not basically what we do. We do individual rooms, multiple rooms in a facility for reentry. I think that for us to look at how we would get the money for this is our organization is really a good, sustainable model when it comes to homeless reentry around the state, and we've really worked hard to prove ourselves and be sustainable, plus be transparent with the money that we get, and that's worked out very well for us over the last few years. And because of our track record and our history, we were actually approached by Clatsop Bank asking if we would be interested in a partnership to finance this building. And we're really great. We've worked with them in the past, and they're a great group. And so we sat down around a table, and we said, this is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to do it, and this is where we're going. And the initial money came from there. The rest of the money came from believers, people who believe in our project and understand how hard we work with our transparency of how we spend people's money when they invest in our organization. And so we've come up with some great solutions. So we've been able to fund our build ahead of time, and then leaning on some partnerships in our community to reimburse that money to cover the cost of the remodel.
Who will be staying at the building?
Well, this will be similar to our other organizations. So it's not the troublemakers. It's the women and the children and the families and the people with a story that, you know, for every one person you see on the street really struggling with mental health issues or addiction issues, you know, there's 25 people you don't see that are going through the same thing. Those are the people who get referred to us mostly. And so we're looking at that population, the families, our senior citizens. And I mean, in 2017, we had an 18% increase in seniors needing assistance. So they're our neighbors. They're the people who are having a hard time just staying above board. And one little mistake happens and they get pushed out of the system. So we want to make sure that they're safe and we're a safety net for that.
What would qualify people to stay at the shelter?
Well, a referral is a qualification. So if a person's looking for assistance and they're looking for help, we're willing to help them, but we have rules. We have regulations that say we're willing to meet you halfway in helping you reenter society. And in order for that to happen, you have to be referred to us by another agency in a community. And that guarantees that we have multiple sets of hands on a person and their story to help them reenter. So we will be going completely to referral only like we do in our other counties. You can't just walk up to the door after having a few beers and go, I need a place to stay for the night. It doesn't work that way. We have a strict set of guidelines to make sure that we're helping people become successful, and we have multiple sets of hands on a person and their story.
Do you think you'll have any trouble filling the shelter?
Not a bit. Not a bit. I mean, the statistics show right now, our data has showed that this problem is going to get worse before it gets better. And we can see that by the numbers of people needing assistance from us over the last 4 years. And with as many jobs as that are out there and lack of housing that's out there, it's going to be apparent we're not going to have a problem.
What kinds of services will you provide?
Well, we provide reentry. So what we do is we do an evaluation of a person and the obstacles that they face to reenter society. And then we bring a team of people around that person to help them overcome those obstacles. That's what we do in a nutshell. So we provide the basic thing. We want trust. We want opportunity for them. And we have case managers, crisis managers. We have all of our community partners. And what we do is we listen to a person's story, and then we bring all of the partners in and wrap those services around that person. And our goal is to have them come in the door in the situation they're in and leave capable of sustaining affordable housing in this community.
There is such a shortage of affordable housing. How can you guarantee that?
Well, we do that now. I mean, access to affordable housing right now is less than 1% in this community, and it has been for quite some time. You know, the lack of housing is always going to be there. The good thing that we have going for us is that we work with a lot of landlords, a lot of local landlords, and they like the fact that a person has went through our program to move back into the community. And we have a good track record with putting successful people back to sustain the housing that's out there. So we're in pretty good shape there.
What are some specific examples of services that you do provide?
Well, we provide the shelter piece. We provide the reentry piece. And so,
explain what you mean by reentry.
Well, reentry. So I can give you a real quick overview. We adopted a boy from Texas. When Eli came to us, he couldn't read and he couldn't write. He was in the third grade. We brought him to Gearhart Elementary School, and they did what they call an IEP, which was an individual education plan. They evaluated the obstacles he faced to be at grade level. And then they brought a group of people around, and Eli next week graduates from high school with a straight A average.
Wow.
So we knew that we have to do that same concept with people. We need to look at them. We need to evaluate the obstacles they face to reenter society and bring a team of people around them to do that. And that's exactly what we do in a nutshell. It's I could go on for hours about what it is that we provide, but that is it. And we track every single step of that way. And that way we can look at a person's story and see directly where we need to provide the help. And that's what we do, and we're very good at it.
Why did you decide to open a shelter in Astoria? I know you already have one in Seaside, but what drew you up north?
The community. The community asked us to. And they publicly asked us to. And the same thing happened in Tillamook. They sought us out. They, you know, looked at what we do and how we do it and why we do it. And they said, we would like to have you here. And all the pieces fell in less than 6 weeks. There are a lot of people who really look, you know, our problem's getting worse, right? And it's going to get worse before it gets better. And because of that, we're the largest homeless reentry program in the state. And we're very good at what we do. And so I think if you put those two things together, it's a perfect fit for us.
As I bet you're aware, there is a perception that all homeless, or most of them, are addicted to drugs or mentally ill, and I know that's true for quite a number, but how do you respond to that?
Well, we've got data. We can prove it. You see, 17 years ago, the streets were full of guys like me, the addicted, the panhandlers.
Explain your background.
I lived on the streets for 27 years. I'm you know, but here's the thing, what people didn't know about me, I was abused as a child. I was sexually abused as a child. I lived through some horrific stuff. And I was running and I was angry and I was hurt. And what people didn't see when they drove past me on the road was that I had a story, that I was a victim. And people don't view that. When we look at people on the street, we automatically think that it's their fault that they're there. That's not the case. We have to look at this problem differently, and then we can react to it differently. And I'm proof of that. You know, I'm a guy who lived on the streets most of his life, and next month I become the Seaside Rotary president. I'm the board chair of multiple organizations. But it's just proof. But thank you very much. But it's just proof that it's possible, and I'm proof that it's possible. So we want to change that perspective is all we want to do.
How did you turn your life around?
I didn't want to die. I was sick and tired of being where I was at, and I just didn't want to do it anymore. And I had an opportunity. And so at that time, the only way to get help was to get arrested, and getting arrested should not become getting rescued. And I wanted to change that perception.
So did you get arrested so that you would get some help?
I did. And that was my story, and it made headline news. And that's what made this program what it is today.
Are you concerned about the impact that the shelter might have on the surrounding neighborhood?
Absolutely not, because we have a track record to prove that's a fear. That's not a fact. And it never comes out like that. I mean, in some communities where we had people picketing, going, not here, not here. Today, some of those picketers are on our board who went, wow, I was wrong about that. And that's what's wrong about, that's what it is today. And we haven't gotten much kickback on that, only a couple neighbors.
Well, unfortunately, we are out of time, but thank you for coming into the studio to speak about the new shelter opening in Uniontown in Astoria early this fall. Thank you, Alan.
Thank you very much for having me. Have a great day.
Roll it.
If you're just joining me, you've been listening to a pre-recorded interview with Alan Evans, the founder and executive director of Helping Hands Reentry, a nonprofit organization that assists homeless individuals in getting back on their feet. The organization is opening a 60-bed-plus homeless shelter in Astoria's Uniontown early this fall. Up next, I speak with Astoria Mayor Arlene Lemire and Police Chief Jeff Spalding about a citywide task force examining solutions to problems involving homeless individuals. I'm Joan Herman on Perspectives on Coast Community Radio, 91.9 Astoria and 89.5 Tillamook. Welcome to the studio, Mayor Lemire and Chief Spalding.
Glad to be here.
Good afternoon.
Update us on what the task force has been doing. Mayor Lemire, why don't you start?
I think it's been going pretty well. The task force started out being the Homelessness Task Force, and one of the first things that we did was change the name to Homelessness Solutions Task Force, because we want to make sure that something practical and can come out of this, that we're not just preparing a report that will sit on the shelf. There was a homelessness group that got together several years ago, and it was just really a one-day kind of meeting, and I think it was good for getting people in different agencies to connect. I'm not sure it did much for the homeless. And so this time it's a long-term, Chief Spalding keeps talking about how this is a long-term thing and it will keep evolving. And we may solve one problem and find another. But we've now kind of put into play the subcommittees, rather than it's a rather large group. So we wanted to break it down into subcommittees that could talk about health and housing and transportation and all the issues that are facing the homeless population.
Chief, what kinds of things are you learning about the homeless problem, particularly in Astoria and the way it affects the community?
Well, I think one of the biggest epiphanies for me is that
you know, we're experiencing significant problems with homelessness, and by a lot of accounts that, you know, how much it's grown just over the past 2 to 3 years, and trying to figure out why that is. But we're also seeing that this is clearly a national issue too, and it's we're not the only ones experiencing this. It's many communities are suffering from the same concerns that we are. And so that's, you know, that was one of the biggest things for me. But for me, it's really finding solutions and finding ways to address the issue, and, you know, in a humane manner without necessarily having to resort to enforcement type issues. And so it's just a very tough problem. And right now there are some things that I just really truly believe that I'm not sure we're going to find solutions for without, you know, help at the higher level, at the national level, to address such things as mental illness and, you know, intoxication and substance abuse.
Who are the homeless individuals, if you were to categorize them?
Boy, I'd say they cover the full spectrum, you know, all the way from youth all the way to elderly individuals that are out there. John, we mentioned earlier, he's 71 years old, I believe. Some of them, you know, I think you could almost break them into categories. Some of them are homeless because they've chosen that lifestyle and they're not interested in assistance. Some are clearly just down on their luck because they either lost their job or they can't afford a place to live. Some are suffering from mental illness. Some have substance abuse issues. So I think there's multiple categories that you could, you know, put some of these individuals into if you were to put them into categories. And I think part of that is what we're trying to do in our task force is to identify what is creating this issue so that we can find solutions for some of those.
How much does the lack of affordable housing affect the homeless situation?
I think it's a huge problem. I ran into two individuals who need surgery, but they're not they can't get surgery even if they have OHP, unless they have housing to go back to recuperate. And it was soon after I had rotator cuff surgery, and I was so grateful to be able to have that. And I ran into a woman who said, I'm supposed to have that surgery, but I can't because I have no place to go afterwards. Yesterday at my Meet the Mayor meeting, I met with a man named Mike who has a need of hernia surgery. He's in pain all the time. Again, the same thing. He can't have that surgery unless he has housing to go back to. So those are just two examples out of, I'm sure, many, many more in the city. And we definitely need affordable housing. I'm excited that we will get the housing between the library and the City Hall at the Waldorf Hotel, or Merwin.
Is that still going forward?
It is, yes. Uh-huh. They seem to be having trouble getting permits or whatever, but yes, it is moving forward. And so that will give us, I believe it's close to 40 affordable units. And we're trying to work with our derelict building ordinance in order to get some housing back into the onto the tax rolls and in use for as affordable housing. That's sometimes a very long process and frustrating at times, but we're trying to look at any solutions we can to provide some more housing.
What are some other possible solutions that you both are examining on the task force to solving or at least addressing the homeless situation?
Some of the different solutions we're looking at all seem to fall into some of the small groups that we've assembled as part of the subcommittees that the mayor mentioned earlier. And so we're looking at such things as health care and having the ability to, you know, provide health care for individuals who don't have access to that now. Again, we talked a little bit about the housing. Employment, of course, is an issue, you know, finding jobs for people. Urgent services is another category in terms of getting people into places they need right away, such as a warming shelter and what have you. And then it's just basically connecting people to, based on the symptoms that they're experiencing, with the right resources in order to get them some assistance.
What has been the police department's approach to working with homeless individuals? I know there are a number along the Riverwalk, particularly in the summer months. There have been complaints about homeless individuals downtown. So what is the police department's approach?
Right. Well, and this kind of gets into this delicate balance of enforcing the law versus taking a humane approach to addressing, the actual issue of individuals experiencing homelessness. And as you might imagine, when somebody has a concern or they see an individual that is either intimidating to them and they're not sure what to do with, or they've actually committed a crime, of course, they're going to be calling us. And so we have to go down and respond to it. And oftentimes, we have to take an enforcement approach, but it's not our first step. You know, our goal would be to, address the situation and hopefully eliminate the problem so we don't get called back. But we are seeing that, as I mentioned earlier, we are seeing a significant increase, and oftentimes it's what we're dealing with is a perception of the problem, because people see, congregations of individuals who may not look, favorable to them, and, they're concerned or think they're dangerous, when in fact, vast majority of them aren't dangerous, but there are some that, do present problems for the community. And so we get those calls, and then we have to go down there and, again, try to find solutions, and sometimes we do have to enforce the laws.
Would you speak about one individual, John, and I forget his last name, but some people know him as Helmet John because he often wears a helmet, and he's very visible in the community. The community recognizes him because he used to spend much of his time downtown outside Godfather's Books, but he since has moved to a Marine Drive near about 8th Street. Speak about his situation, because there is a perception he was kicked out of town.
Right, right. Now, the individual you're referring to is John Waddell, and he's been in this community, from what I'm told, for over 20 years. And I would call him a beloved individual, and many people, just kind of sympathize with him and would like to be able to take care of him. John is one of those persons who will tell you himself that he's in the situation he's in because, or at least that he isn't looking for services. He's happy with his lifestyle. John, as many people in the community have seen, carries with him several shopping carts, several suitcases full of his worldly goods. And the problem is that they seem to continue to grow to the point where it concerns people. They call us. There's people that call us concerned for his safety, but they also call us because he's violating, a city ordinance or a state law, such as illegal camping or lighting fires and blocking the sidewalk and those kinds of things. So we've had many contacts with him. I think in 2018 alone, we've had 17 calls for service regarding John. And so we've gone down and talked to John, and we've always really tried to work with John to gain his voluntary compliance, to get him either to pare down his goods or move to a location where somebody, is okay with him being at. So more recently, we've asked him to pare his goods down. He's scaled back a little bit, but then it seems to come back again. And so he has all his worldly goods with him. We've asked him to relocate to an area maybe just a little bit away from the original location. We have never told him that he couldn't be in the downtown area. We have never told him that there's anywhere in the city that he can't be. He just have to obey the rules and not violate the law. So more recently, he relocated to, as you mentioned, Marine Drive, and I think more specifically between 3rd and 4th Street. So then we started getting calls from different motorists that they couldn't see to get out onto Marine because his property was blocking their view, and so that was creating, obviously, a traffic hazard. So we approached John and said, John, you need to move your stuff. You need to go to a different location because you're blocking traffic here, and also your stuff is blocking the sidewalk. So John agreed, and again, he's been compliant for the most part. He moved his stuff. We got a call, I think, the next day, same problem. He's back out on the sidewalk area again, still blocking traffic. Another motorist called. So at this point, he was given a 24-hour notice that if he doesn't remove his property, we will have to come take his property for safekeeping, and then he could come back and get his property at some other point. But he was never threatened that he was going to be arrested. It was simply a legal requirement that we have in order to be able to take his property to prevent, some tragic accident from occurring. And so again, it's this is again gets back to the delicate balance, because we do have to enforce the laws equitably throughout the community. And even though everybody knows and loves John, John also has to follow the rules. And we have to be careful about giving John special treatment just because he's John. So at the end of the day, we're going to work with him because he has the right attitude and he's got that willingness to cooperate. And that's what makes a difference, too, in terms of how we enforce the law with John anyway.
I don't know John's specific situation, but a number of people with mental illness are also homeless. So what can the task force hope to do to help address that? Mayor Lemire?
Well, we talked about it a little bit on the healthcare subcommittee. Amy Baker, who's the executive director of Clatsop Behavioral Health, was on that subcommittee, as well as Jared Karnofsky, who's the vice president for support services for Columbia Memorial, and Mike McNichol, who's the director of Clatsop County Public Health. And so we did address it, but kind of obliquely. We were talking more about general health services. And I was encouraged because Jared from Columbia Memorial was talking about three possibilities, and these are not all going to be carried out, but they're possibilities for the hospital being involved in this. One was a health van, which would be a clinic on wheels to provide medical services to students at the schools who cannot afford them otherwise. And that seems to be a very big need, both dental and just regular mental or health services. And any student on the free or reduced lunch program would be eligible. Another one that they were talking about, both CMH and also Clatsop Behavioral Health, was medication-assisted treatment, which I didn't know much about before. It's kind of similar to methadone, but in this case, they give Suboxone, and I'm not pronouncing that correctly, but it's the use of medications in combination with counseling and behavioral therapies for the treatment of substance use disorders. And in Clatsop County, that would mean heroin and opioids. The third one is that the CMH Pavilion is closed on Sundays, and they said it could possibly be opened as a drop-in clinic for the homeless on Sundays. So there were three possibilities there from CMH in collaboration with Clatsop Behavioral.
Okay. All in all, what would you like to see coming out of the task force? We've got just not even a minute left. Not to put any of you on the spot, Chief.
Well, I think if we can help one person, we've made some headway. But I think it's increasing awareness, and I'm hoping that the task force is going to be able to present a variety of solutions that they can present to City Council here in the upcoming months, and get some ideas that we can work towards. Some of them are going to be long-term goals, some of them are going to be short-term goals. So again, the fact that we're communicating, we have 20 individuals, as the mayor mentioned earlier, from all aspects of this issue. So I think we have all the bases covered in terms of having the right people on this task force.
That's great. And you get the last word because, unfortunately, we are out of time. I want to thank my guests, Astoria Mayor Arlene Lemire and Astoria Police Chief Jeff Spalding, who are heading up a citywide task force examining possible solutions to challenges involving homeless individuals. Thank you, Mayor Lemire and Chief Spalding.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Earlier, you heard an interview with Alan Evans, the executive director of Helping Hands Reentry, a nonprofit organization that is converting an old Finnish boarding house in Astoria's Uniontown into a 60-plus bed shelter for homeless individuals. This is Perspectives, and I'm your host, Joan Herman. The show is brought to you in part by a grant from the Clatsop County Cultural Coalition. Perspectives was engineered today by Brian Bovenizer. The show can be heard Fridays on the stations of Coast Community Radio, 91.9 Astoria and 89.5 Tillamook. You also can find show podcasts on the station's website. If you would like to contact me, send me an email to perspectives@coastradio.org. Thanks for listening.